they're all from the Pama Language Center, and they'll be presenting on vindication for the Pakpiti First Nation through language revival.
Thank you. Actually, Agnes was sick and couldn't come. This is Anthony Shorty. The Pakpiti First Nations language reclamation and revival shows the importance of ancestral language to the well-being, recognition and future existence of a nation. Our language reclamation also shows how the spark of language can be kept alive through hard times and to be nurtured and grow again into a sustaining flame. Pakpiti are Australian First Nation who originally centred around the Tenpole Creek at its junction with the Wenlock River in Cape York. Pakpiti traditionally owns a dialect of the Angutimuri complex. After the first devastating wave of European invasion of Cape York, when Frank Jardine and Lachlan Kennedy moved through the area on a wave of massacre en route to the northernmost tip of Australia, Pakpiti settled at the Marpoon Mission on the traditional land of the Chumunji Nation. Despite previous administrations developing a sustainable and self-sufficient society at Marpoon, moves were made to clear the path for Comalco, who wanted to mine the area for bauxite. The first moves to close Marpoon down began in 1954 with a conference between the Presbyterian Board of Missions and the Department of Aboriginal Affairs. Between 1958 and 63, the peoples of Marpoon resisted the efforts of the last missionary, Garth Filmer, who was known to the people of Marpoon as White Man, to close the mission down. Questioning White Man's authority was punished. If he didn't take away your privileges to purchase goods from the stores, people were banished and sent away to Cow Creek or Bamaga, both of which were Department of Native Affairs controlled settlements. With so many people being sent away, the Department of Native Affairs began to establish a new settlement called Hidden Valley. Despite their efforts to enlist the help of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders Advancement League, the government's motivation was revealed when Comalco was granted a mining lease on the land at the Marpoon Mission. When pressed, Comalco remained silent on why the mission was being shut down, whilst the government and the Presbyterian Board of Missions blamed each other. In mid-1963, the supply plane stopped visiting Marpoon. By November, the local store had run out of food. Then on the 15th of November, state police arrived by boat from Thursday Island and the Director of Native Affairs, Pat Caloran, ordered police to remove Chumunji traditional owners, as well as all others from the Marpoon Church Mission and burn the community to the ground. Excuse me. Whilst the boat sailed away that night, they witnessed the police and Department of Native Affairs carpenters raising their buildings to the ground, still full of the people's belongings. The last building to be burnt was the church after Stephen Mark was removed to Thursday Island with his wife and children. In this picture here, you have Johnny Mark, is the son of Stephen Mark and the husband of Agnes Mark. It's a painting he did showing what he remembers looking back to the shore as Marpoon was burnt down. Hidden Valley, you can see in this small picture, is 35 kilometres south of Pajinka, which is there, the northernmost part of Australia. It's now known as New Marpoon and was established essentially as a domestic penal colony for people whose crime was inhabiting land potentially useful to a mining company. In the end, the bauxite mines were never created at Marpoon. The Marpoon tribes, including Pakpiti, were moved 120 kilometres away to a land they were unfamiliar with and which they felt was inferior for hunting, fishing and agriculture. Their sisters Agnes Mark, Victoria Kennedy and Susan Kennedy have grown up identifying as Pakpiti, and today they are three quarters of the entire Pakpiti tribe. Whilst their father was an Atumbaya man, they were raised Pakpiti by their maternal grandfather, Donald Fletcher. The last speaker of their language, Fletcher had learnt the language by escaping from mission dormitories to spend time with three Pakpiti elders. At that time, speaking your ancestral language was a punishable offence. The Kennedy sisters have continued to identify as Whakapiki after Fletcher's passing. Other traditional groups have mocked the sisters for maintaining their identity and were suspicious that the sisters were pretending to belong to a clan that nobody had ever heard of in order to achieve a greater share of mining royalties. They were ridiculed, and this has led to a shared feeling of depression. This painting of Agnes's lonely flower was done at a time of depression. In 1996, when lease agreements were negotiated with the tribes of the old Mapoon area, the Mbakwiki were excluded. In a letter penned by Victoria Kennedy, she points out that Mbakwiki were excluded because it was a tribe that the elders claimed not to know of. And yet Donald Fletcher was a man well known to the people of Mapoon and New Mapoon, and it was not contentious that he was Mbakwiki. The anthropologists also had in possession profiles on Donald Fletcher, and they could make no determination in their favour, and Mbakwiki were grouped as a subgroup of the unrelated Tapatigi tribe. Now, this arrangement has allowed them to enjoy the benefits of funding from the Western Cape Communities Trust, but the Mbakwiki cannot be satisfied with being beneficiaries and at the same time denied their identity. In 2011, the Native Title Tribunal granted ownership to the sisters as owners of the land formerly inhabited by Mbakwiki, and yet they've recently been told that the Western Cape's Community Trust won't be reviewing their inclusion. Sorry, I'm a bit trigger happy. In January, the sisters were confronted by two senior men of the community who mocked them, telling them there was no such thing as Mbakwiki. This led to a heated exchange, the type of which the sisters have grown accustomed to over the years. This persistent effort to deprive the sisters of their identities has been the fire that's burnt in their bellies, maintaining their desire for recognition and the natural outcome that Mbakwiki has a seat at the same table as the other tribes of Mapoon. When we began working with these languages, the situation looked very bleak for most of them, but none of them looked worse than it does for Mbakwiki. Whilst proficiency had been lost, the three elders had maintained the major driving force we're riding on now, which is the will to revive their language, revitalise their culture, and reclaim their identities. Whilst Mbakwiki language was not the primary medium of communication, they kept alive what they could through their arts. The three sisters are all artists, well known in Queensland for their paint and print works. They're consistent and prolific. One moment of concerted appraisal and you'll find consistent themes through their work. Whilst Mbakwiki had been thought silent, it had in fact been speaking in whispers through their art. However contemporised, their art's unmistakably Mbakwiki. Agnes Mark, the oldest sister, consistently portrays material culture of the Mbakwiki and ethnobotanical knowledge that may otherwise have been lost. This mamaliti, which we used at the opening slide, is a message stick, carved and used to send messages to neighbouring tribes. The skipping rope plant is a medicinal plant used for treating a number of skin ailments. And this is Mwintriri, which is a painting of a dance that is also Mbakwiki origin. Mugu is a yam. So when the leaves have all fallen from the vine, like we see here, they know it's time to harvest the mugu. Susan Kennedy has preserved the folklore of Mbakwiki. A dominant figure in her art is Kafri. Kafri is a small, hairy people in Mbakwiki folklore. It's almost universal throughout Australia. At best, they're described as mischief makers, but sometimes they're known as hairy devils. Victoria uses her art to preserve knowledge about Mbakwiki, understanding of fauna. This is Mutki, a spoonbill, often paints fish. And one thing that features throughout all of their artwork is Kiambara, which is their Bapiti totem, a crocodile. This Kiambara is on the floating islands of Tentpole Creek, which is the most sacred places to Mbapiti. None of the three sisters have yet stood on their own soil. This Kiambara is, you can see it there with the carpet snake, which is the personal totem of their father. This is a large permanent installation by Susan Kennedy, which is right in the heart of New Marpoon, centred among the same clans that deny their existence. Donald Fletcher did leave some songs behind with the granddaughters. Last year we recorded a set of songs that the sisters had learnt from and written with their grandfather. They'd been singing them for decades without having a productive command of the language. The secret Donald Fletcher left behind was that he passed them the language passively through these songs. A comparison with the published sketch grammar by Terry Crowley and word list demonstrated that they'd indeed been singing an otherwise silenced language. What's more, they'd been teaching these songs to the other tribes of the community who enjoyed singing them. Remarkably, the sisters had preserved features of the unusual Bapiti phonology that are foreign not only to English, but to most Australian languages. Crowley described it as the most unusual phonological system in all of Australia. But syntactically, it's fairly conformant to Northern Cape York typologies. Confirmation that they'd been singing Bapiti was a relief, and they felt immediately vindicated. Australian First Nation revival projects often have no material to start with other than word lists. The recent Bapiti recording works add an unusual dimension to this revival project, a small corpus of literature created by an elder before the silencing of the language. Late last year, Mbapiti began a new collaboration with the Palmer Language Centre, the Northern Peninsula Area State School, and an ancestral language action team from the neighbouring Injinuikia to establish an intergenerational transmission choir. It's run in the local schools with all children from the five nearby communities learning Bapiti songs and Injinuikia songs. Through this, every child in the Northern Peninsula Area, which is a diverse group of some 20 language communities, they become partially enculturated in Mbapiti through the learning of their songs. Other groups, particularly those whose leaders had previously derided Mbapiti, gain access to meaningful insights into their core traditions and beliefs. In this video, the children of Ingenue Primary School sing an Mbapiti interpretation of the gospel song, This Little Light of Mine. Each year level of the school learns these songs, and for most of them, it's the first time they've ever heard of or heard the language Bapiti. This might be a bit loud. After we piloted that project, Susan Kennedy reported to the Board of Directors with Cape York Partnerships, which is the parent organisation of the Palmer Language Centre, that the Mbapiti sisters were so happy not only to be learning more about their language through the creation of novel material, but to be sharing it with others. Whilst they'd held on to the limited knowledge they developed as youngsters, they're working hard and studying their language so that one day they'll be speaking with fluency and teaching their grandchildren. For them, the intergenerational transmission choir was the first time they'd taken their language out of the home. Agnes Mark, the oldest sister, wrote to Julie Mayhew, who was the choir master for the project, to let her know that We, the Mbakwati families, are very proud and uplifted by the choir project, and we believe our ancestors are too. So now the sisters are working on a try to develop a rich corpus. They've adopted new activities such as the writing of children's books, which are part of their revival efforts. Other new texts are being created by translating songs and stories that they already know, and we have a number of books in production at the moment. This small sample from one of Vicky Kennedy's books will be realised as a learner's phrase book. Sorry. We're mindful to not allow our efforts to descend into a passive documentation act, wherein we extract whatever ancestral language and knowledge remains in the collective memories of these sisters. But we put them firmly in the driver's seat, and they're committed to the creation of new knowledge, new literature, and the reclamation of lost domains. One domain that has until now been lost is Mulgari, or corroboree. Mulgari in Druaara means contemporary or modern corroboree. Crowley reported that Donald Fletcher didn't feel confident to speak texts other than sample sentences into a microphone. However, the Mbakwati Ancestral Language Action Team member, Jan Gertesen, has discovered texts recorded by Crowley describing the building of canoes and the method of conducting Mbakwati corroboree. He's recently transcribed and applied a new orthography to these texts, and these kind of fragments of information are priceless treasures for the Mbakwati. The sisters have written a considerable volume of modern corroboree songs. This project in particular is trying to revive the entire domain, but I think corroboree is often rendered in English as a dance ceremony or a social gathering. It's not a very good definition. Mulgari is the ritual through which the Mbakwati interact with their dream time and their ancestors. Now these sisters would like to perform one of their Mulgari Ndruara songs, and you'll be the first people not up here to hear one of their corroboree songs in more than 60 years. After we done our first recordings, this phrase, "We Kanangana," was one they came up with to describe their feelings, which it says, we are saved or we are found. For a people suffering from the trauma of decimation, dispossession, forced migration and public mockery, the rediscovery and confirmation of their identity will secure the existence of this First Nation. Whilst the Kennedys have known all along that they're Mbakwati and they've kept their little light burning inside them, they feel that having and using their ancestral language completes their identity and that this is the way to improving their well-being. Susan visualises well-being as a sum of physical, spiritual, mental and emotional health, and the sisters agree that without their language they have nothing. Their work through their art, the stories and their songs show a lifelong and highly successful effort to express their culture. Their artwork tells a story of a people who lost their voice but are now learning to speak again. Through their revival work, they now have their language, the title to their ancestral country has been returned, their culture has a new vehicle, and they feel their identity is complete. And that's all.
Thank you for sharing your language and your artwork with us. It was really beautiful. We now have time for questions or comments to our speakers, and I'll let you call on
people.
I guess I'll get us started.
Go on.
What I'd like to ask is, in the program Teaching the Children, what was the first session like, the first time that you went into the school?
We were a bit nervous, but it was, we felt like it's really good to get out there, to take our song out there, because it's important for us. Yeah, we felt really good taking it out there, because we wanted everyone to know about our language and that it does exist.
This is one of Agnes's. I think she was describing it. She says it's her mind is like a universe, and obviously lots inside there. Yes.
Have you thought about bringing in the artwork with the children as well, and maybe explaining to them a little bit about the artwork?
Yeah. Because through our other training, art training, we are encouraged to go into the schools and teach art, and that's what me, Agnes, and Vicky are doing now.
Xavier, you mentioned something about being bilingual due to forced assimilation. The other day I was talking to you. Could you expand on that a bit more? Because, you know, in Australia, we've been forced, like many other tribes around the world, into this assimilation policy that destroyed a lot of their language, took us off land, and now they said we should know English.
Hmm. So, it's not really related, but what I was saying was that there's a huge burden of from the Commonwealth of Australia. The expectation is that Indigenous people are bilingual and bicultural, but the expectation isn't on Western Australia, on white Australia. They remain monolingual and monocultural. Yeah, which obviously, yeah.
Thank you.
They looked as if they were surprised because they haven't heard it before. Yeah. And you know, they were singing and looking at us, me, Agnes, and Vicky, and thinking, where is this language from? Because they haven't heard it, and that was the first time we went to the school to sing with them and teach them.
So there was some voice trying to sing with you, or to do it like this.
Oh, so all the kids were singing,
yeah.
Eventually, you're right, so
they were singing.
It's an easy gig,
yeah.
But kids like singing anyway, so.
It's an easy song, so we chose to sing an easy one for them, teach them an easy one.
Yeah.
sing these songs in front of kids, like in school or out of school?
Well, we haven't yet. That was the first time. But at home, you know, we go to church and we sing it at church. We kids in our community, they sing it. We sing it all the time.
So that was a pilot, and we're getting funding at the moment to bring it into the school. So one of the things we try to do is not only this, but some economic development as well, where this becomes a job for them. So they'll be paid to be in the school and teach the language. And it's not just a curiosity.
She wants to know about the songs. Where do you normally sing them? What are they about?
We normally sing it at church. I'm trying to think of the English words.
they've all been gospel songs at the moment. So these new ones we're doing are the first secular songs, if you like.
In English, it's saying, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Every day, I'm going to let my little light shine.
Thank you very much. Oh, go ahead.
Yes.
I just want to say how much I appreciate how you've worked so hard for your language, because it's from your heart. I really appreciate that. Because in Canada, we're losing our languages, and we're working very hard to revitalize them. Here you are, you're a family with your champions, and you're bringing it alive, and you're helping it spread and like ripple effect into the world. That's beautiful. I really appreciate how you use the song and the art for language, and that's a really good model to use for the little ones and for people like me who are trying to bring the language back and speak again. Really appreciate what you've done and what you're showing the world.